The show that doesn't grab them by the but does occasionally kick them in the It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network, and welcome to it. Today we have got a lot to recap. Because we didn't have a show last week, we didn't get to talk about it. And yesterday, of course, we had to cover the Supreme Court. Today, it's all about Trump's salute to veterans and whatever happened to all of that. Plus, did Ancestry.com come back to haunt Mitch McConnell? And is the DOJ in the pocket of the TRUMP? Well, I'll discuss that with the DREW. Coming to us from Texas, please welcome correspondent Drew Landry.
Hey, Shaggy, I brought my thinking cap today. I'm ready.
For our radio audience, yes, today he is actually wearing a thinking cap. And I think we're going to need it today because this is going to be a head scratcher. Okay, I want to start off with the 4th of July. And of course, if you listen to any of the other works that I do, you know that I'm based out of a reggae station in Maui. We did a little bit of a coverage of why Hawaii does not celebrate the 4th of July the same way the rest of the United States does. And the reason being is because, well, there's a little complicated backstory to that. But, as said, this year we also found in a Gallup poll, overwhelmingly a lot of Americans weren't feeling so proud to be American-ish. And so, with that said, we go into the 4th of July salute to veterans that Donald Trump planned, and it cost us $92 million, Drew?
Yeah, that was and a colossal price tag here. He even took money from the national parks, you know, and even, you know, bring this out. So, you know, this is just a phenomenal price tag for what his base felt was great. And I think a whole host of other people felt was just a waste of time. And I don't think that this was really supposed to be a salute to the troops or to celebrate the 4th or whatever the case may be or whatever he was selling it as. It was just more or less the president's going to talk on the 4th of July and I said I was going to make America great again, and so this is how I'm going to make America great again by talking on the 4th of July and getting my base all happy about the military.
Yeah, about that though. Okay, let's start first with foreign press coverage. Okay, let's not even talk about the domestic press, which was painful to watch at times. But yeah. Foreign press. Okay, I first start off with one of the countries that we love so much over here in Hawaii. They call themselves Aotearoa, but you call them New Zealand. Now, from the land of the kiwi and fern leaf, we have some news reports that from Auckland. You're going to love this. Auckland's Channel 4 News started off the day covering Trump's 4th of July salute to veterans by, and I am not kidding, 7.5 minutes of uninterrupted laughter between 5 on-screen hosts, each one trying to keep a straight face of getting through the actual text of the story. So, as far as Aotearoa is concerned, New Zealand, Drew, do you think that they got the message that America is great again?
I don't think it was conveyed to them. I don't think it was done in the way that the president wanted it to go. I think he was wanting one of these little awestruck moments like, wow, look at that. That's really great. That is so wonderful. Everyone loves this. And that's not what happened. That's just not what happened. I mean, you know, and there's one thing that really wasn't the president's fault that you can't really say that it was the rain. I mean, the weather wasn't going to cooperate. He should have just called it off and, you know, said, you know, we'll do it tomorrow or some other time whenever it was not going to be so rainy. You can celebrate America on any day that you want. It doesn't have to be on the 4th of July. I understand why, but, you know, if it's going to be a bad, you know, weather day, it literally rained on his parade. That is literally what happened. And so that just adds, insult to injury. It just wasn't the message he was wanting to convey to everybody else. I think in his mind of minds that if we can get a little psychoanalysis of the president, which is dangerous to do, I think he was hoping for something of North Korea. I think he was hoping for something of Russia and their military parades, and everyone would just salute in some way that they, whatever it may be. To him, and he'd stand there and everyone would be cheering and all these formations and whatever else. So that obviously didn't happen. And for him to cause foreign press to laugh for 5 to 7 minutes, that's just egg on his face.
Well, that's just it, because you mentioned the next country's media coverage that I was going to jump to. Comrade, it is time that we talk about Russian coverage of Donald Trump's salute to veterans. In words of Bolshevik leaders of the past, it did not end well.
Niet,
comrade. It was, as they like to say, I can't say that on the air. Now, here's this. There's a funny story. My 12-year-old taught me how to swear in Russian. The internet. Am I right? But anyway, okay. Because I can't swear in Russian on the air, because, there could be Russian listeners, and they will be like, Bozhe moi! I do want to say that when it came to Russian coverage of Trump's salute to veterans, they were not as much laughing like the Auckland news coverage was from New Zealand, as they were making very sharp, terrible roasting type comments, not only on air, but through their Twitter account. And it turns out that what you were talking about when you said, I'm not sure that this came out as Donald Trump wanted it. Remember, Donald Trump planned the salute to veterans, and as such, that means that all of the military equipment that assembled there, Trump, in some way, shape, or form, actually helped handpick that thing to be there. Now, the stuff that he picked to be there was, of course, a little bit evocative of World War II versus any current conflict. Now, of course, I'm going to tell you from a military perspective, because I was almost military. Thank you, medical waivers. I really want it in, too. But the thing is that when it comes to military people, they will tell you that putting out the newest and greatest and latest stuff in an open field where anybody with a camera phone can walk by it, probably not the best of ideas.
Yeah.
But when it came to Russia's media coverage, they talked about a dilapidated army, 50 to 60 years old of equipment, out of date, absolutely ridiculous. They called it post-World War II America dream boying. They actually made comments about how some of the tanks were literally held together by scotch tape. Because their paint was flaking, and instead of repainting the thing, they just took the loose paint chip and put it back up on with scotch tape. So the Russians had a field day with this story, basically portraying America as an old and dying empire that is well past its prime, only sitting back in its own narcissism about past glories, not working towards a better, more prosperous future like good people of Soviet... just Russia, independent Republic of Russia.
Yeah, I think that's on them. I mean, you would think foreign countries would, especially the former Soviet Union, Russia would understand that kind of mentality, that you don't want to show your shiny new object, and people can take pictures of it and try to figure out how to build it and all that stuff. I mean, maybe I'm being a bit presumptuous in the fact that other people would know that, but I fault the president on a lot of things. I don't fault him on that. But truth be told, I don't think this whole parade was necessary in the first place. So let's just get that out of the way. But if you are going to do that, that's probably one of the better things to do is just, you know, this is, you know, an older tank. Everyone's going to love it. I'm Donald Trump. I think it's great. So therefore it's going to happen. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, if you're going to invoke the greatest generation, which is something that the Donald Trump base is consistent largely of, if you're going to do something that's going to evoke the memories to them, wouldn't you instead go over to the Smithsonian and be like, hey, guys, you got any B-29s and B-17s, say, 1943 B-29D, perhaps? I mean, that was the one that we were using at the end of the war. How about the P-51D? That was the best Mustang that we actually ended up using, not in one, but two conflicts, and it actually saw time during Vietnam as well. A prop-driven World War II-era fighter plane saw time in Vietnam. So if you're going to go and use like the nostalgia factor during the salute to veterans, if you're going to salute the veterans of previous war, it would make sense to be period accurate. But knowing how Donald Trump decorates his house, nobody really expected a cohesive plan to come out of the 4th of July salute to veterans. But Drew, I got to ask you a very serious question.
Okay.
Should this have happened?
No. I don't think you needed this. I mean, this is my issue. I mean, I don't think that America needs parades like, you know, to show off our military. We don't need that. And we don't need to show other countries or the world or whoever we're trying to really bring out here that we are the best ones. You do it by being the best one and by acting like you are the best one. And that's shown through your leadership ability, through the culture that you have, through your economic prowess, through the way that you treat others and just the way that you are as a country. That's how you show greatness. You don't do it by having a military parade and getting history wrong and suddenly being made fun of because you get history wrong. And, you know, that's just, you know, that's not how this works out. And I'm just in my head confirming to my own confirmation bias that this whole thing was just done just to rouse up his far right base. Mm-hmm. To make sure that everyone is going to love the flag and love the military. And when I run for reelection, we're going to do so many more of these things. We'll do one next year and the year after that. And we'll keep having these parades and yada, 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 yada. But I just want to point out two things here. And I do think we need to spend just a little bit of time on the last one that I'll do is. But the first one is this hypocrisy from the right that I just want to throw in their face is that they care a lot about debt. They care a lot about spending money and where it doesn't need to be and all this and that. When we're talking, you know, taking money from the national parks and $92 billion and all these other types of monies that's being allocated for this particular project, for one thing here, for one day, where's the outrage about homeless veterans in this country? Where's the outrage that you are having about not wanting to secure the border that you keep saying that is a crisis? And yet this president has taken money away from these things to put on a freaking parade. Are you kidding me? Don't come at me with this stuff anymore. I'm done with this. Because you just proved that those things don't matter as opposed to the whole aspect of a parade. That is so incredibly vile and stupid for them to come at me with all this, well, we got debt, we got all this, and we don't have enough money for this. Well, you just allocated and all this type of money for a stupid parade that we don't need to show America's greatness. How we show America's greatness is by using that money to better the country in the ways that I talked about earlier, not by putting on a dumb parade. But the parade, as it may be, I just want to make fun of the president as he claimed that the teleprompter went out and said that somehow the armies was
yes, yes. Can we talk about that?
Was going on with the airports. I saw so many hilarious memes on this when it comes to things like one if by air, two if by sea. I'm sorry, no, not one if by air.
Well, one by land, two by sea, three by air.
Three by air, yeah, that was it. And then gear up for the Battle of LaGuardia, you know? And you got Washington crossing the Delaware.
Oh, my God. At
tremendous stage, you know, the battle for LaGuardia, you know, I'm like, oh, my goodness. So this is the type of stuff that I just had to go, look, I mean, I give this guy more credit than what a lot of people on my side want to give him. I give him more leeway. I understand that people can make mistakes in particular ways, but this is just beyond the pale. I mean, you cannot get this type of thing wrong. And I first heard about it and I shook my head. I go, there's no way. And then you look at it and yeah, it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because there's the thing. I just want to throw this out there because I'm from the state where it happened. Flight did not occur until 1912. Significantly after the Revolutionary War. As a matter of fact, it was right around World War I.
I think you need to write the president a letter and explain that to him.
Well, okay. Now, even going... Now, here's the thing. So, that you know, we're going to have people that are going to be like, no, no, no. They're going to come back, and they're going to try to rewrite history, and they'll be like, nope, nope, nope. Hot air balloon flight was present in the European continent during that time. And then I would once again say, no, you're wrong. That was about the 1820s. And after, once again, you have about 50 years of nobody knew how to fly. And I mean, you know, I've tried this. I've explored Maui's back regions where there's no habitable life and stuff. I've done the trails. I've done the walking. I have never seen an airport in the wild.
That would be amazing if you were able to find that. I mean, that's
right.
I mean, they just,
you know,
I just, there's so many other little things I thought we could just bring up about this, you know, this whole thing about how they man the airports. And that's,
you know, this is one of those things that I think if George Washington were alive today to hear that, he would be like, oh, I've got to get on Twitter. This is ridiculous. You're not going to believe it. At Ben Franklin. He thinks we had airports.
Yeah, we had. Oh, my.
Yeah. Oh, my God. But that is something that's very important to bring up, though, because when you go and you're trying to fan the flames of your base, you're actually going to throw out a bunch of things that sound glorious. Some of them might not be historically accurate. Mm-hmm. When you do that as a national leader at a celebration of your nation's military, both people and might, and you make that kind of mistake, even people in North Korea went, that did not happen. Because, I mean, as much as the rest of the world rewrites United States history, like the UK, the prime minister, the guy that actually... You know, well, the prime minister's assistant, the ambassador, the guy that wrote inept, basically saw that speech, looks at Theresa May, who's still prime minister, by the way, and goes, that's what I was bloody talking about right there.
That's the thing I was talking to you earlier. That's right there. That's
ineptitude. That's ineptitude. And when you do that on a national stage in front of an international audience, diplomatic ramifications are a coming. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is... if you mess up the easy stuff that you're supposed to get, how can you be trusted with the most difficult things and that you're not supposed to mess up? I mean, this is... It's just, you know, you can't carry the shoe, therefore you can't walk in it, therefore you can't drive the car because you can't do simple stuff, therefore can't do complicated things. This is a very much... You know, if he can't get the history of his own country right, even though he blames the teleprompter, who's to say when it comes to diplomatic actions with other countries that he's going to be able to even handle that? And we've seen him in the past, you know, 3 years here dealing with other countries, constantly saying how great of a deal maker he is and all these other wonderful things that he has touted, only to be shown up, only to be shot down, only to be booed in not in a literal sense, but in other particular manners, to be just flat out rejected. It's just flat out terrible. I mean, that's just sad.
Well, the thing that gets me too is like, because if you don't have a grip of history, you can make some pretty bad moves. Take for
Absolutely.
Instance, I'm gonna give you one of these instances where this kind of ineptitude could come back to haunt us really, really badly. Okay, Drew, it's time for some history. Strap yourself in, because this has to do with what we just celebrated last week, the American Revolutionary War. Let's say, sometime within the next 2 weeks, Vladimir Putin, who listens to this show, I am sure, gets an idea that he's going to go to Donald Trump and basically lie about things that have happened in the past. And one of the lies that he wants to gravitate Trump towards believing is that Russia had a hand in helping the United States get formed. Now, how could he do this? He could say, well, you, Comrade Donald Trump, you remember in U.S. history, you are taught about the Prussian army that came to support you after the French would not. We are the Prussians. We just dropped the P.
You know, I would just want to say that that awfully sounds very, very familiar. I totally get it, because whenever you take a P from Prussia, you get Russia. And we don't want to add any more P's to Russia, because you have a tape of me peeing and I don't want that. So we'll just call it Russia.
Yeah. Yeah. And see, here's the thing. Prussia is modern day Iraq.
Yeah.
Little difference in geography. So once again, this is how not having a true and total grasp of actual basic fifth grade level world history could harm us diplomatically. Now, the thing is with the rest of the world, they also notice that flub. And, Drew, do you know how hard Africa laughed at us?
They've been dying to laugh at us for a long time. They've wanted to laugh at us over something, and now we gave them a really good reason, other than George Bush dancing.
Watching some of the coverage of the United States from Africa, like Cape Town and South Africa and stuff like that, these news reporters got on there and goes, the president misspoke. There was never any airports back then. Something that all of our children learn in our great public schools here. You know, it's like they just basically came out and said, yeah, of course, you know, that's not correct. But if you're anything older than a child here, then you would know that. And it's like, ouch. Did South South Africa just ask us if our president was smarter than a fifth grader and answered the question? No.
No.
So, I mean, that kind of public display from Donald Trump, grandstanding for his base, that's exactly what he was doing, but that kind of public show of him trying to elicit support, and we've only got a couple minutes here to talk about this, Drew, it's dangerous for a very bad reason, because when other dictators around the world, the guys that Donald Trump idolizes, do these kinds of speeches with weaponry and all of this stuff, it's usually kind of a rallying, preemptive movement to get their country ready for the next big war or conflict. So when all these other countries, specifically countries like Iran, that has just basically backed out of the deal that we took years to set up and only months to ruin, Iran backing out of this deal says, look at this 4th of July salute to veterans. This was nothing but militarism and authoritarianism on display as the United States changes over to fascism. Now, is that an accurate assessment of what somebody outside of the United States could perceive?
You know, I think there's lots of interpretations you can make from that. I don't think that's entirely far off, because I think, I never once thought, you know, other Republican presidents wanted to destroy the Constitution or just kind of upend it. I didn't like Bush or Reagan or any, you know, they weren't my favorite presidents. But truth be told, I never worried about the whole aspect of ruining the Democratic Republican values that we have and we hold dear in this country with them. I never thought the Constitution was ever at stake. Yet with this president, I am ever so fearful that at some point he's going to say, we don't need to have another election. I'm president forever. And that's just how, you can say, well, that's hyperbolic, symbolism, and not really. But the truth of the matter is this. Looking at Trump's personality and who he likes to pal around with and who he likes to be around with, this falls right into that category of possible people interpreting this as being some sort of a fascist authoritarian type of a movement.
Yeah, and the thing that scares me the most, there was a lot of people in his base that said this is exactly the direction this country needs to go.
Yeah.
But yeah. I just kind of want to throw this out there as a little caveat to World Diplomacy 101. Once you start being a real jerk to your own people, other countries don't respect you as much.
Yeah.
And when it came to the 4th of July salute to veterans that we had with Donald Trump, we did not garner any more respect from the world. We garnered two things. One, a lot of foreign schools going, would you like to come to our country so we can teach you about the invention of flight? Turns out you silly Americans were wrong. It didn't happen in 1912. It happened in 1911 in Marseille, France. But we'll let you think the Wright brothers were the first ones. But look, we've got to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk about how Ancestry.com might have Mitch McConnell rethinking some Senate hearings coming up. That's on the way. The Shaggy Chicken Show.
Too much consumption of the Shaggy Jenkins Show could result in a higher IQ, a better understanding of the world, and not being called a f***ing idiot as much. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back. Oh boy, we've had a lot to cover in our first segment and even more to cover in our second as we talk about, well, Mitch McConnell and Bill Barr. If you missed any part of the first part of the show, hey, go to the website, ShaggyJenkins.com, or look us up on a lot of different places. You can go to iHeart, you can go to Spotify, iTunes, just search for The Shaggy Jenkins Show, and you will find us. And make sure that you subscribe. Joining me is not a guy that has a lot of subscriptions to The Issue in his life, because they have volumes when he talks about politics. Please welcome Encyclopedia Politica, Drew Landry.
Hey, still wearing my thinking cap, in case everyone's curious.
Yeah, you're going to need it for this second segment.
Joop.
Joop. So let's talk about a very interesting story that came out yesterday, and I dare say it could change the debate happening in the Senate. Okay, so first, a little personal story. Drew, have you ever taken one of those DNA test kits?
I want to, but I haven't done it yet.
I have, and it has caused a lot of fun in my family. Turns out that yours truly has a little bit of what we would like to call very safely Western North Carolina post-Civil War migration DNA. So part
All right.
of my, yeah, so part of my DNA comes from Africa. And they linked it to that time period. That place. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things where it was like when we found out that Shaggy has a little bit of Cameroon and stuff, my parents both said, well, we were going to take the test, but we're not now because, and I quote, we don't want to know which one of us gave you the black. So, with that said, DNA tests and, just ancestry in general can kind of shade, even though it's way in the past, can kind of shade modern events, as it were. They've definitely shaped modern events in my own life, so I can attest to that. Well, there was a story ran about Mitch McConnell, and it looked like in his ancestry DNA report, his relatives in the past kind of owned a dozen plus two slaves, 14 yep. different slaves. I think it was his great-great-great-grandfather owned 14 slaves. Now, this is something that you're probably thinking, well, you know, it happens. This is a part of the American history. And blah, 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 blah. But I'm from the South. Legacy means something. And when it comes to a guy like Mitch McConnell, who has proudly posed multiple times in front of a Confederate flag, has said that the proudest moment of his life was telling President Barack Obama he wasn't going to cooperate and do his job with him. This guy is also right now sitting at the head of the branch of government that is starting to kind of figure out if now, just now, some, you know, 127 plus years since the end of the Civil War, if now is a safe enough time to talk about reparations. Drew, do you think that there might be something to Mitch McConnell's resistance for this topic to come up that has to do more with what he believes is the quote-unquote familiar, traditional way of his family life?
Yeah, I think that has something to do with it. I mean, just based upon, you know, the reports that are out there, this seems very much like, you know, this is very personal and doesn't want, truth be told, doesn't want to owe anybody any type of money other than those who he has to. And I think that has something to do with it. I mean, he has gone on the record several times in the past saying, you know, making people who are 150 years away from something and they didn't personally own any slaves and making them pay for it just didn't seem right. And yeah. But at the same time, his family line has seen this, and it seems like they have profited from unpaid labor. Therefore, it seems like that those who he owned, those people that his great-grandfathers owned, are kind of in due to those payments that they have somehow just been lacking. I don't really know why. Crazy stuff here. But I just want to comment just a minute, just for a second. No, I don't want to go down a rabbit hole here on ancestry and genealogy, because this can really open up a lot of scars for people. And I think that has a lot to do with not wanting to find out. And because you are told something for a very long time that you are this and you are that and this is where you come from and da 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 da. And then you do one of these little things and it finds out that that was either not entirely true or it not is true at all. And then you're suddenly just like, it's an eye-opening experience and you go, wait a minute, how much of what I've been told as a kid or my entire life has been a lie? What else do I not know? And then you become incredibly interested and then you don't know anything. And I think that's what a lot of people don't want to do, especially those who are leaders like Mitch McConnell, who wrote a book in 2016, it was published in 2016, and it really talked about openly about his family, about his grandfathers, great grandfathers. And so it was like, you know, these are the people who I grew up and I, you know, lived in Alabama. I was very happy living in Alabama, and they lived in Alabama. And so they were all about Rolling Tide and all that great stuff over there. But this is a part where he either doesn't want to talk about, doesn't want to even acknowledge, and let alone the fact that this could also be the fact that there are many other people who share his name and have a whole other line of family who are McConnells, who are not in his own particular line, if you know what I mean. I mean, let's just, you know, Sally Hemings, Jefferson, and, you know, the long senator from South Carolina, Strom Thurmond. And how his entire black family stood up whenever he died. So, you know, this type of stuff is probably what he doesn't want to get into. And he's going, no, I don't want it. Nope. And so all the things that I just mentioned, you're kind of ties together in the fact this is why he doesn't want to find out. This is why he doesn't want to talk about reparations, because he might end up having to owe somebody something, and he doesn't want to do that.
Just a skosh. But there's a very interesting thought experiment that I got engaged in, which is, this is so great. Drew, you're the only person qualified on the Shaggy Jenkins Show staff that I can have this conversation with.
Uh-oh.
It has to do with theoretical reparations.
Okay.
Okay, so here's the thing that a lot of people don't understand about the original 40 acres and a mule kind of a promise. Now, you remember that, right? It was, hey, slavery's over, 40 acres and a mule for all you guys.
Yep. Good job.
Right, so 40 acres and a mule never happened.
Yeah.
But there's a reason why. Drew, have you ever looked at the population of the United States from, say, outer space?
Not in a while.
Okay. Well, good to see that you're back, Rocket Man. But if you were to go orbital across the United States at night, when everybody was on in their house and the streetlights were on, you would notice something very interesting. You see, the United States is a country where we do not like the interior of our country. As a matter of fact, a lot of us, 80% of us, actually live in kind of a big ring around the entire border of the United States, with only about 20% loosely making up the interior of the United States. Mm-hmm. Now, that area is referred to as the Rust Belt, and typically that's the heartland of the United States where, you know, when the rest of us are feeling kind of like, we want to be nostalgic, or we want to have those simpler times that the people like Pepperidge Farms and Wilford Brimley talk about happening on those old commercials that we grew up with. We always think of the interior, the Midwest, right? It's that place of good values. I mean, you're a good Midwest boy. You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. But here's the thing. And this was the part of the political argument where I'm like, only Drew is qualified to have this debate with me. Because it has to do with the 40 acres and a mule. Now, let's say that we went back and we said, okay, reparations did in fact supposed to happen, should have been paid out. And since we can't really adjust for value on all of the monetaries and stuff because so much time has passed, we'll tell you what, we'll calculate the cost of a mule and give you that money, but we'll give you 40 acres. Where in the United States would that 40 acres of land most likely be located, Drew?
You know, I have an itching feeling that it's going to be in that heartland, in that Midwestern areas.
Yeah. So you see, here's the problem for most white people in government now. They don't want to say this out loud.
No.
But this has been a problem ever since the 40 acres and a mule was first brought up. If you give Black Americans 40 acres of land in a place where Black Americans typically don't live, and they start to migrate to that area, you have changed the voting diversity of said area. And all of these lonely white people in the interior of the United States, and I mean that because it is very lonely driving across the United States. There's a reason they call it flyover country. It's miles and miles of nothing but miles and miles.
That's exactly right.
So with that said, if the 40 acres and a mule, once again, we'll just give you the money that we've cast, you know, adjusted for inflation for the mule, but here's your 40 acres. That would irrevocably change the voting in the United States forever, shifting a lot of communities that have always been staunch conservative communities into blended communities, which usually leads to more progressive thought. So this is the political argument. Drew, is the reason that we do not want to go into reparations debate really about losing the white power base of the Midwest?
You know, that's an interesting question. I never really thought of it That very well could be. And when we talk about the Midwestern, white power base, I mean, we have to really look at a few states where that's, ever so conservative voting. And, you look at my home state of Indiana, and then you look at some of the other particular, like in Tennessee and Kentucky, obviously that's Mitch McConnell's area. And, getting into Missouri and some of these other places, that are in this area, that would radically change a lot of, giving them these 40 acres in these particular parts in this Midwestern flyover part of the country would really change the voting patterns. But, things are what they are today. There's not a lot of things to offer extra people in those particular parts that they would really want to go to. I mean, you don't hear people saying, hey, moving to Southern Indiana, and people go, oh, what? Yeah? Why are you going there? Or, I'm going to Kansas City, like, wait a minute. I mean, I can understand why people might want to go there for the barbecue, but, and the pulled pork, but I don't really know why that would be a big drive to go to Kansas City.
Yeah.
Or Topeka. I mean, you get the picture here. There might not be a whole lot of draw there for them to want to go there now. But had we had that whole deal been done years ago, and it taken shape today, America and those states would look very much different than what they do now.
Yeah, because see, here's the thing, and then Killer Mike, the rapper, keeps bringing this up time and time again, not just in his political speeches, his interviews, and his Netflix show, but also in his music. He said that when it comes to the black community in America, there is this kind of disparity, whereas the places that they were, quote unquote, allowed to go, which, let's just be honest, it wasn't allowed. It was stigmatized and basically marginalized until that was the only areas that they were going.
Yeah.
But with that said, he talks about, imagine how radically the United States economy would change if black and minority communities were in charge of farming.
Okay, that'd be an interesting thought.
Right, because if you think about it, ever since post-Civil War, America has not really done anything to establish Americans of African descent a way of being economically upward and mobile as even the farmers of the Midwest.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of those head-scratching moments where when we're looking at modern issues with reparations, and now knowing this about Mitch McConnell's it's not really that big of a secret, and I think it's actually something he wears with a badge of honor.
Mm.
But when it comes to this, and him being in the head of the Senate, talking about reparations would bring up so much, I'm going to say this as blatantly as possible, old white man backlash, that the entire point of trying to repair a damage done between peoples would lose. It would just be lost in the ethers of the arguments of, well, what happens if this and what happens if that? So, Drew, when it comes to Mitch McConnell, will there ever be a sane conversation with him about America's slave past?
No, I don't think he wants to have a sane conversation. I think he'll just get to his talking point, get to that 15 second that he wants to get to, and then just let it be the end of that. And then you push him onward, he would just repeat it. But I just always hope, and I hope and I hope and I hope, that the people of Kentucky don't send him back to Washington, that they realize that he they always like to say Harry Reid blew everything up, who was the Senate Majority Leader for the Democrats for a few years. And how he caused so much problems and all that stuff. Harry Reid never stopped a Supreme Court justice nominee from getting a hearing. Harry Reid didn't flat out say, I'm going to make George Bush a one-term president. Harry Reid never said those things. Mitch McConnell did. And Mitch McConnell has been the obstructionist and proud of it, of the Obama years, and now he's the biggest proprietor, most propelling person of the Trump administration. He is so on board with what the president wants to do that it's really tough to see where Mitch McConnell's turtle shell really shows. And so it's tough for me to want to root for him in any particular way, not because I feel that he screwed over Merrick Garland, not because that he wants to act as obstructioner in chief. It's the fact he just doesn't want to do his job. He's just there to win elections, and that's the problem that we have. It's him. He's the issue. He's the problem. He is definitely a chief part of it, and he has to go. But to answer your question, and I'm sorry to go off on that diatribe, but to answer your question, it's not just Mitch McConnell who needs to have this honest conversation. I need to have that conversation with myself. I mean, my last name, Landry, has Cajun roots, has French-Canadian roots. And I did a small surname look, and there were many, many Landrys who served in the Confederacy, more than those who served in the Union. This is something that I have to really get around and say, look, my family probably owned slaves at some point in my lineage. It probably happened. And maybe somebody in my family profited from that, from this unpaid labor. And probably I might have to owe somebody those things. I'm fine with that because that's something that I have that I have to wrestle with. This is something it's not every single white person in America has to deal with. It's the fact that we have to stare at the sin of slavery and say, how can we right this? How can we make this better? It's not by electing the first African American to be president. It's not electing, elections aren't about that. It's about going further and being that repairer of the breach and having painful conversations and not having people get upset over it and doing this in a delicate way. We and you and I, and I say you and I because we are white guys, in case anyone didn't know, we have been a cause in the rift in this for a long time. We as being white people, white men. What we have to do is start to build the bridge. We have not built any bridges. We have said we're not talking about reparations. We're not talking about race relations anymore. It makes me uncomfortable. We're not talking about black women anymore because it makes me uncomfortable. We're not talking about women in general. It's making me uncomfortable. We've caused this, Shaggy. We've done this. It's time for us to step up and say, you know what? We got to do better. Because that's the America that will make America great again, not parades and other silliness. But this is something that we can do and heal as a country. It just takes some bold leadership to say, you know what, maybe we need to have this difficult conversation.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Mitch McConnell wants to have that. Matter of fact, I'm fairly certain that he doesn't.
You know, I'm just going to kind of quote Kelly from The Office here in my response. First of all, how dare you? Second of all... You're absolutely right. A lot of people don't want to have this conversation because they're afraid of the skeletons that exist within their own closets.
Yep.
But pay attention now. Mitch McConnell has always tried to frame this as an argument of, well, we don't need to talk about this now because the people that were involved in it and victims of it are long dead.
Yeah.
This is the thing. And this is something that you can only realize as, once again, how dare you, a white guy. Since that period that slavery actually ended in the United States, a set of laws, a second set, as it were, of rule, were set aside for communities, minority communities specifically, and state after state after state, these systems of oppression, whether they be judicial, whether they be economic, or even geographic, these limitations cost that minority community greatly, and the interest of the loss that they started with at the end of the Civil War has exponentially grown since then. So if we look through the course of the history of the Caucasian race in the United States, we see a nice steady line of progression. If we look at minority communities within the United States, and that includes Mexicans that we said that we liked you, but then we kicked you out in 1911, then we liked you again in 1924, then we kicked you right back out again in 1933. Even for those communities, when it comes to the United States, the barriers that we've put on them, their timelines would not move as fast because we've put controls in our society. Caucasians have put controls in the judicial system, in the economic systems, in every system that you can imagine that touches your life that exponentially benefit Caucasians over other people. So when we talk about reparation, it's not just what Mitch McConnell said, where this is an issue of the past, where everybody involved is dead and gone. No, yeah. It's from the time that those people were alive, we have, and this is an actual correct usage of the term, we have retarded the growth of their society.
Yeah.
And as such, they are way behind of where they would have evolved naturally were it not for our systems of control. Now, when you talk about institutionalized racism, that's exactly what reparations is supposed to address. Not only repairing the economic and social damage done to minority communities since reparations was first discussed way back in the 1860s, not only is it a continuation of that conversation, but it's also having to address in the United States in a very open and honest fashion whether or not we want to allow accountability to be a part of our social psyche. Because if we're going to be accountable, guess what? Me and you don't look like the good guys, do we, Drew?
No, we don't. No, we don't. And I just want to make another statistic for you just to further your okay. point. Whenever you look specifically at Texas, those who are over the age of 25, the education system has not been so kind. Those who are white over the age of 25, 1 in 4 Texans have a high school diploma. For African Americans, that's 1 out of every 3. For Latinos, it's 1 out of every 2 that don't have a high school diploma. That is a staggering statistic for those who are over the age of 25. That just goes to show you how it's good for one, bad for the others.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is that we have to end on the good for one and bad for the others because we were supposed to do a story about Bob Barr, and we only have 1 minute to do it. So I'm just going to throw this out here. The question was asked in the headlines today and yesterday in Politico, is William Barr on the take for Donald Trump? You have 30 seconds to answer. Drew.
Yes, he is. He's very much on the take for this guy. He's been on the take since he has taken office. He is the defender of this president, not of the country.
Yeah. Well, but William Barr is, wow, good timing, by the way. Gosh. Yeah, William Barr is the new Michael Cohen, and that is the end of our show. I'd like to thank Drew Landry for coming back and talking a little bit about, well, stuff that needed a thinking cap. Until next time, love you, mean it. Get in, bye.